The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
I won't respect the science, won't respect people who want freedoms. I want to be very clear. Proof of vaccination is about keeping Canadians divided. I create propaganda in our institutions. We are limiting people's freedom of speech, limiting freedom of peaceful assembly, politics of division and fear.
Basic dictatorship.
And it will not continue without deliberate, mindful propaganda. We must continue to impose unprecedented sanctions on
unvaccinated.
And we must continue authoritarianism. But if we're going to be honest, then we need to be honest.
Photo ops! You know what? When this pandemic hit, our government was well positioned, knowing that we need to lean on tyranny and
misinformation
when we make policy decisions that aren't based on science.
We buy health professionals that continue to spread misinformation and disinformation on the science.
The vaccine mandate in the first place was coercive.
And the reality is,
this was a violation of the charter.
Mandates are forever.
Because we know that when we invest in Moderna and when we eradicate the middle class and make Canadians more divided, while
sending checks to
Professor Schwab, World Economic Forum,
you
will own
nothing
and be happy.
We need to put
the World Economic Forum
first, which we have always done.
Building back better
means slowing our economic recovery
while maintaining our momentum on reaching the 2030 agenda.
This inflation crisis right now is a direct result of the global reset.
Canadians can count on a dedicated team of reporters to bring them
propaganda
every night because we paid them $600 million. You don't get stellar headlines without greasing the wheels a bit.
Welcome, everyone. It is Thursday, March 30th, 2023. I'm Bob Met.
And I'm Robert Vaughn.
And this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online.
Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing. It's Just Right.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
We always like to open our show with a fictional drama. And for the purpose of today's discussion, what could fit the bill better than Kian Bexley's dramatic May 2022 production of Trudeau, if he was being honest? Now showing at a theater nowhere near you, starring one of Canada's greatest actors, that man of many faces, the Prime Minstrel himself. Our good friend and regular guest Salim Mansour joins us today, and he has reached a point where he's calling for theory to be turned into practice. It's a call to action. And what you are about to hear today has already drawn the attention of Brian Peckford, former Premier of Newfoundland and the last surviving signatory to Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms, about which more will be said at the closing of today's broadcast. Between now and then, Salim makes a persuasive and compelling case for amending Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms, connecting the dots directly from Canada's constitutional shortcomings to the events surrounding the Freedom Convoy and to all of the truths heard in our fictional opener today. Join us, won't you? Right after, our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org. Hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave. Follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible.
Events over the past few years should give even the most staunch Canadian patriots reason to re-examine the nature of the country they profess to love. At any time, on a political whim, and for no good reason, we could have our lives upended. We could even be killed, and very little will become of it. This is what we learned over the last few years. You know, we cannot escape that fact. You just have to listen to people I've interviewed, like Pastor Artur Pavlovsky. the arresting of pastors on the highways, closing down of churches and schools, you know, forcing people to wear masks, things of this nature, just like unconscionable what has happened to us as Canadians over the last few years. And nothing has happened to rectify that. We live in a police state. The police do the bidding of politicians and medical bureaucrats. The courts, most of them at least, do not recognize our inalienable rights. The press are bought and paid for, and there is no opposition in government at any level to rally to your cause. Nobody. Is this really a free country? Was it ever? And here to discuss that with me is our good friend Salim Mansour. Salim, you posted on your Substack, which is salimmansour.substack.com, and you delved into the history of Canada trying to answer that question, are we or have we ever been a free country with people being sovereign? We the people. The conclusion is no. With regards to our rights and our sovereignty, you only find that we've never been sovereign. It's always been the parliament, always been the monarch or the parliament. People are not mentioned. We're serfs in our own nation, even to this day. You know, up until the Westminster Act 1931, Canada didn't even have a foreign policy that it could call its own. Not until 1982 could we even amend our own constitution. So, I mean, as a sovereign nation, perhaps you could say that we began in 1982, and yet what remains sovereign is the parliament, not the people. And I encourage people to read your Substack, because at the end, and you need that historical preference to understand it in its entirety, but at the end, you make a proposal which is profound and subtle, sublime even, 7 words, an amendment to the preface of our Charter of Rights, which will change all of that. So please, Salim, take us through your article. Go light on the history, because it's a long article. But at the end, you propose something I think that is a fundamental solution we should all endorse. Salim, tell us about it.
Thank you, Robert. As I was listening to your opening remarks, the word that jumped up in my head was, we Canadian people, we have been orphaned. And so being orphans, you know what the state of an orphan is. Foster father, foster parent, or guardian of the state, and so on, who brings up the orphans. One can go back to Oliver Twist and Charles Dickens' story. And so that's what we have been, and we are still now. And to understand that situation and how to correct it, if we can correct it, the orphans coming together to assert their rights and their freedom, which is what the Charter is supposed to have done, but never did. Charter was, as I describe in my paper, fake ornaments, ornamental bubbles, no substance. By the way, I was last week in Calgary at a meeting, and you mentioned Pastor Pulaski, and he was there. It was his party's meeting, and they had invited me, among others, to come to the meeting to talk about globalism and World Economic Forum and its impact on both Canadian and provincial politics. And I shared my thoughts with them or the paper I was working with, and I wish you were there, Robert, literally. The people around there, people like Mark Friesen and Bob Leone and others, they were just gasping for breath. They were so taken up in the sense that here it is. Here is the answer that we have been seeking. I hope so. You know, I can, in my own small ways, if I can contribute to this discussion, you know, that would be advancing all of our orphans' interests, so to speak. You planted that word in my mind. So, yeah, I mean, the past few years have been a challenge, as we have been living through, and it has been in this period, all of us have been thinking about what is the problem. We have Charter of Rights and Freedom, as you point out, and that became the Constitution Act of 1982. And so we have the Constitution of Canada, which has two portions to it, the Constitution Act of 1867, which is now being read as Constitution Act of 1867, not the BNA Act of 1867, in terms of citation and title, and the Charter on Rights and Freedom as the Constitution Act of 1982, and together they form the Constitution of Canada. So we have this, and yet we saw what has happened over the last few years. And as you mentioned, Arthur Pulaski, the way he had been treated, among others. I was in Calgary when this other pastor, Pastor Reamer, was thrown out of a public library in Calgary, knocked down, floored, kicked around. And then the next morning, the police came to his residence and arrested him and took him to prison. This is the state of affair. Some people will say we are exaggerating, that if this is what we are seeing in Canada is what was seen in the 19th.
I could just interrupt you for one moment, Salim. I would encourage the viewers and listeners to this to go back to an interview I did with Artur Pavlovsky about 2 weeks ago. It's on our YouTube, Rumble, BitChute, and Odyssey channels. And it's also been turned into, the audio of it was put into a show of Just Right. And so you want to go to our website, justrightmedia.org, and listen to that, because it will send a shiver up your spine to think that our governments can do this to a citizen.
Exactly. There will be those people and a whole lot of them in the media and in the political establishment, in the academia and so on and so forth, would say that we are people like you, me, or Artur Pavlovsky, we are exaggerating. The reality is that the people on the street, people living their daily life, know that how quickly this country's mask has fallen over this last 3 years. And we can see what people in other parts of the world under dictatorships and tyrannies and totalitarian governments have been living through and faced with. Ours has not become that much violent, one might say, but it's all in our directly in the face of the people. If you don't agree, then you will be hauled away or you will be penalized and so on and so forth. So how did this all come about? In a country that past generation writers and thinkers, I'm reminded of this book by Mr. Armstrong that was published in early 1990s, Farewell to Peaceable Kingdom. It is a wonderful book, you know. That was in 1990. And here we are after the Emergencies Act. And an Emergency Act then was basically upheld as it had met the threshold requirement by the commissioner appointed by the government, by Justin Trudeau. Justice Paul Rouleau came out and saying it was all okay. It had met the threshold requirement. So I discuss all of that in the paper. And the question is, what is this charter? And how did it come about? And the nutshell of the argument, what people might have felt and thought about or seen it as basically a charade, however, whatever word we want to use to describe it, intuitively felt about it. From my point in my study and my reading, I went into the rabbit hole. The situation or the reason for what the charter represents and is as follows, you know. There is the other story, the more fundamental story. The Canadian Constitution, as it stands today and as it has stood since 1867, the BNA Act that created the Dominion, and 1982 that resulted from the repatriation of that act from London, to which was added the Charter of Rights. What we have is on hand a hybrid constitution. On the one side is the BNA Act, an act that was passed as a statute by the Imperial Parliament in London, Westminster. The very opening lines of the Act lays down that the Act is a statute being passed by the Imperial Parliament to establish the Dominion of Canada with a constitution that would be similar to, on principle, to what governs Britain. So that is the English system of government. And once one gets into the heart of the matter to understand the English system of government, it is all built upon the supremacy of the Parliament. The British Constitution is generally referred to as the unwritten constitution, that is, a constitution based upon common law or civil law, plus the statutes that the Parliament passes, and the Parliament is supreme, Parliament is sovereign. The King, the Lords, and the Commoners are all within the parliamentary supremacy. They are the different faces of the parliamentary supremacy. So if you ask the question, who is sovereign? The Parliament is sovereign.
Yes, there is a small fringe element in this country that is angry, that doesn't believe in science, that is lashing out with racist, misogynistic attacks. But Canadians, the vast majority of Canadians, are not represented by them. And I know will not allow those voices, those special interest groups, those protesters who can, I don't even want to call them protesters, those anti-vaxxer mobs to dictate how this country gets through this pandemic and how we recover our economy free from lockdowns, where people can get back to work and back to doing the things they want to do and keep our kids safe. They don't get to dictate policy of this government.
You know, America is such an enigma. If you're not born here, you have to take a test to live here. But most of the people who were born here would fail that test as miserably as I did.
So then maybe to be truly American is to be ignorant of America and to take it for granted at every juncture.
Oh my God, you guys. Do you know what this means? The greatest Americans in this country are sitting on this rooftop.
There's something I'd like to bring up here, Salim, and that is the difference between the United States and Canada. Exactly. In the United States, they elect representatives to their houses. They elect representatives of their state to the Senate. Meaning, and this is very crucial, meaning that these are ordinary people who go there to represent the people. We do not, in Canada, elect representatives. We elect our members of parliament. In other words, we elect our betters. We choose the people who we want to rule over us as sovereign. They're not representatives. And I think people, if they go back into some of the history of the different constitutions, they'll find that this is true. Our parliament, our parliamentarians are above the law. They are not common people. Once they get elected, man, they are in charge. They can do whatever they want. Not so in the United States, although sometimes it may not seem that way. They're representatives of the people. They are the people. There's a big difference.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, in the description, the issue is about sovereignty. The idea of who is sovereign means the source, the origin from which the law proceeds. You know, and there is no higher authority to that of the sovereign, whoever the sovereign is. Again, I won't go into all the details and the weeds about theology. You know, God is sovereign, and then God delegates the sovereignty to his representative on earth, and that is the king, the monarch. That's the divine right to rule. Quickly, the idea of sovereignty is located either in a person, the monarch, or in a corporate body, the people, or in the institution. So there are three places where sovereignty is located: the monarch, the institution, or the corporate body. The British parliamentary system, or the English constitutional law, as was set out and explained by Sir William Blackstone back in 1760, and he is, in that sense, the father of English constitutional law. I mean, his textbook, Commentaries on the English Law, was the basic book that every student of law, advocacy, and so on and so forth, journalists, pamphleteers from 1760 onward to our time, they studied that. That was the thing. So the quick point is that Canadian founding fathers of the Federation and the American founding fathers of the Republic were all students of Blackstone. I mean, people forget that the 13 colonies was British North America, right? George Washington was serving the British crown before he became the general of the Republican Army in 1776. And just about every one of the founding fathers, they were all students of Blackstone. So the British system, the sovereignty resides in the parliament. That's the institution. And that matter was settled in the Civil War of the 17th century. In 1648, or was it 1649, Charles I was beheaded by the parliament as a result of the Civil War. Oliver Cromwell became the Lord Protector. And that ended the argument, where is the sovereignty? If the king's people, Charles I's people and his army had prevailed and defeated the Roundheads, which was the army that Cromwell was leading, the parliamentary army, then the divine right of the monarch would have carried on, as it did in France with the Bourbons, till the French Revolution, where the people rose up and guillotined the king. So in 1649, Charles I is beheaded, and the sovereignty now resides in the parliament. What does sovereignty mean? It can do anything and everything, as William Blackstone has laid out, you know, anything that is naturally possible, or the opposite of it, anything that is not naturally impossible. And a later just would say, to make a woman a man or a man a woman. And now in a world, we have to revise that.
He actually said that. That's an actual quote. You'll find that's it in Selim's paper.
By Justice William Riddle of the Supreme Court of Ontario at the beginning of last century, in his little monograph called The Constitution of Canada, History and Practical Actions. So the supremacy of the parliament was very clear, and the king was brought back within the parliamentary power in 1689. That's the Glorious Revolution. And the king, or the queen, that is the monarchy, becomes a constitutional monarchy.
As a matter of fact, in our Constitution, it quite clearly states that Parliament is comprised of the House of Commons, the Senate, and the monarch.
Those are the three elements, right? But they are all within the institution of the Parliament.
Yep.
The Parliament is supreme. So the 1776 revolution, led by the 13 colonies, was a revolution against the supremacy of the parliament, but it was in the Declaration of Independence by Jefferson, the face of the parliament supremacy, that is sovereignty, was George III. So George III was called the tyrant, the despot, you know, you had to give a face. But that's the whole idea, that the crown is the face of the parliament, not the substance of the parliament. The parliament itself is supreme, and that was proven, I'm repeating myself, by beheading the king. So the 13 colonies rose up against the British system of government, root and branch, and eliminated it. And they established a system of government as the first articulation of a system of government, a republic, which is the natural law tradition. That is, the rights and freedoms are inalienable. They're endowed by a higher authority, which is not a monarch. It's either nature, or as in the Declaration of Independence, Jefferson penned, was endowed by the Creator with a capital C, and it was left at that, right? So that's the natural law tradition. In the British system of the constitutional law, people talk about the Magna Carta going back to 1215. In 2015, England and the Commonwealth countries celebrated the 800th anniversary of the Magna Carta that King John gave to the barons at Runnymede. Well, the charter is a grant. It's a privilege given. And so it is a grant given to the people, to the barons, to whoever, by the sovereign, in this case, King John. And it can be taken back anytime, you know, because it is a gift. A grant. So in the British parliamentary system, the rights and freedom, which is common law, is protected by the parliament. It is a grant given by the parliament. It can be taken back by the parliament anytime. The fact that it has not been taken back often enough is a different story. I'm talking about the principle over here. So what happened in 1867, our founding fathers went to London with the request that we be made into a dominion, a confederation of Upper and Lower Canada, the provinces of Canada, joined together by the Maritimes, that is the provinces of New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, and create a union that would be called the Dominion of Canada. By the way, Johnny Macdonald preferred that Canada be called the Kingdom of Canada, but the British Imperial Parliament decided against it. They did not want to offend the United States. That was coming out of a civil war. People were very concerned about whether the United States would aggress northwards. So the title that was given was Dominion of Canada. The critical point is, it was a statute that was given, and everything was laid out. If an 1867 document compared to the American Constitution is a volume, pages after pages of instruction about the union, about the legislature, about the judiciary, about the bureaucracy, about the jurisdiction between the federal government and the provincial government, and so on and so forth. The American Constitution is just 5 articles, barely 10 pages. So that was given to Canada, and Canada remained, in that sense, a Commonwealth country with a constitution, in this case, a written down constitution that was granted by the Imperial Parliament, and we remained so till 1982. And what I point out, that 82 is 40 years, Robert, and in this 40 years, whole generation of Canadians have been born and raised. And these were the Charter Canadians. I call them the Charter Canadians. The bulk of them, the most of them, and the people from across the country who supported them, I'm now referring to the Freedom Convoy, that went to Ottawa to ask for redress. They said, what has happened to our Charter of Rights and Freedom? We believed in our Charter of Rights and Freedom. You said that this is our rights and freedom. You laid it out, and we accepted it. We have celebrated it for 40 years. Some of us were children. Some of us were young adults. Most of us were not born in 82. And here we are. We are Canadian. We're proud. We grew up in this. You know, I'm articulating the sentiments that drove the people who could not accept and believe that their rights and their freedom, as they believe, guaranteed by the Constitution, was so cynically crashed by Justin Trudeau. Instead of the Prime Minister coming out in Ottawa to sit and meet with the organizers and the protesters of the people, to meet with them in some sort of an arrangement. That's what happened. The people were going to the Capitol. We always see the pictures of Americans going to the Capitol, you know, if there's any anger or any protest. They have the right. That is the right to speak freely, the right to associate freely, and so on. That's the First Amendment right. And at any time, you know, throughout the Vietnam War, demonstration after demonstration, in where? In the Capitol. Where? In front of the White House and the Congress, in that mall, you know. That's where Martin Luther King Jr. gave his famous speech, you know, I have a dream. You know, that's where millions of Blacks gathered together in the 1990s. That's where people go. People, 300 million, 330 million people, when they have to say something, they go to their capital. That's where they assemble on January 6th in 2020, you know, angry with the results of the election that was being hijacked, you know, and so on. See, here it is. We are supposed to be a democracy, one of the oldest democracies in the world. People forget that. In the period that we have been democracy, that we, you know, we proudly, you know, as Canadians, look back on our history from 1867, France has had 5 different republics, you know. So this is the current version of France, is the 5th republic. So we are one of the oldest democracies. Our parliament is a copy of the Mother of Parliament, which is the oldest democracy in the world, the British system of government. And here it is. Where do the people go for redress? They go to the capital. They go to meet their government. And in the provinces, they go to the provincial capitals and the legislature. That's where they came. And what should have been the government response and a proud democracy? Okay, you have grievances, you have problems, you know, we will meet, we will sit down, we will hear you out. And, you know, the government doesn't have to say that we're going to abide by everything that you do. But, you know, that's the conversation that needs to happen. And what did they do? On Valentine's Day, they came down with a bludgeon, a martial law, the Emergencies Act, you know. And they trampled upon the rights of the people and they drove them out. And that was the moment, Robert, when the Chartered Canadians went with an expectation that their rights and freedoms are secure and guaranteed. And they were standing on the ground that nobody could have faulted them. And in fact, a year later, Justice Paul Rouleau, the commissioner of the public order emergency, in his report and in his public remarks said that nobody can fault the Freedom Convoy and the people who came. They were exercising their democratic rights. And then there was this rude awakening, the shattering of their sense of who they are their identity as a Canadian with a Bill of Rights, you know, and why did that happen? And that's the question I answered. Why it happened? The facts of the matter was the charter was simply ornamental, a fox bubble. It had no substance because the charter did not in any way change qualitatively in substantive meaning the nature of the English constitutional law, which is our constitutional law in terms of our constitution built upon and copied upon the British law, which is the supremacy of the parliament.
Why did you sign off on the compensation deal for Omar Khadr? And what do you have to say to Canadians who deeply disagree with your decision?
The Charter of Rights and Freedoms protects all Canadians, every one of us, even when it is uncomfortable. This is not about the details or merits of the Khadr case. When the government violates any Canadian's charter rights, we all end up paying for it.
Dear Prime Minister, I'm a Canadian Muslim woman of Pakistani origin. All these, that is Muslim, woman, and ethnicity, are labels you claim to support. So it is my humble request that it's time for you to resign as Prime Minister. I don't say this because I don't like your face, nice haircut though, but around the globe, the Italian Prime Minister resigned. The Pakistani Prime Minister was pushed out, and the Sri Lankan head of state ran for the hills. The Tory party in UK threw Boris out, all for less reasons than you and your cronies have subjected Canadians to.
And you know what? If you don't want to get vaccinated, that's your choice, but don't think you can get on a plane or a train besides vaccinated people and put them at risk.
If you care to listen, I'll share with you. You had a fantastic career as Prime Minister in which you showed the Canadian public how to do Bhangra in India with a questionable entourage. You showed Canadians that blackface matters. You love selfies and photo ops, but when real media ask you pertinent questions that impact your citizens, you hide behind a plant. You're beholden to communist regimes.
There's a level of admiration I actually have for China, because they're, you know, basic dictatorship is allowing them to actually turn their economy around on a dime and say, we need to go green as fast.
You're paranoid when you see a truck.
The small fringe minority of people who are on their way to Ottawa or who are holding unacceptable views that they're expressing do not represent the views of Canadians.
You have imprisoned a native, real Canadian woman, Tamara Leach, for allegations that are contrary to our freedoms and democracy. I think it's time you took a long vacation again on one of the Aga Khan's islands. And you might do Canadians a favor this time by just staying there. And while you're at it, please take your inexperienced, inefficient, intolerant cronies with you.
You are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online.
And there was in Ottawa, 2 days before the Emergency Act was imposed, the last living member of the 11 first ministers in 1981, who negotiated and signed the deal, Brian Peckford, the premier of Newfoundland in 1981. He was there in Ottawa last year, and he spoke out. And he spoke out passionately about defending the rights, the charter rights, that he was there, that he understood exactly what it was meant to be, and so on and so forth, you know, and we're going to stand and defend. That's just 2 days before February 14th, Valentine's Day, when the Emergency Act was brought down. And here it is. The entire ruling class, the political elite, the first ministers, the professors of law in all our universities, the journalists, the pamphleteers, everyone, they were operating within the framework of the English constitutional law. And that's, again, Robert, in my view, Canadians have been reflexively anti-American. They don't want to be American reflexively. That is, Canada was built, founded by the Empire Loyalists. Because people in the 13 colonies who didn't agree with the revolution, they moved north. They came north. And they settled along the Hawktown-Kingston Highway. Toronto, Kingston Highway, that's still called the Empire Loyalist Highway. The point is simply historical, but we do, that is we Canadians, or a majority of Canadians, particularly the Canadian elite, they do take pride in the sense of their identity that they're not American. We are a constitutional monarchy, just as Australia is, just as New Zealand is. By the way, the most important member of the Commonwealth or the colonies was India. That was the crown jewel. And India became independent and rejected being a constitutional monarchy, established a republic. And because the British didn't want to lose India from the Commonwealth, Britain adjusted its law to accept India as a republic. But there are other parts of the British Empire that became republic. They didn't join the Commonwealth. Egypt, some of the other states in the Gulf, you know, that were ruled by Britain, they didn't join the Commonwealth. So we have taken pride in that history. And I'm not here casting any aspersion on that, is a historical fact. So reflexively, you know, we have gone along with this whole idea and principle and the working of the British constitutional law, common law. So where does common law idea come from? It comes from Britain. It is that history. So the British history becomes our history. Of course, Canada has changed. Canada has changed in my lifetime. You know, like this is my 50th year in Canada. It's not the same Canada that I came to in 1973-74. So it has changed. It has grown. It's far more diverse in ethnicity and background and so on and so forth. But coming back to the heart of the matter, the Charter Canadian, and the Charter Canadians are Canadians, you know, I mean, from New Canadians, old stock Canadians, First Nation Canadians, et cetera, et cetera. They're believed in the Charter, that this is their rights and freedom that are now constitutionally guaranteed and protected. And that was the rude awakening that has happened. And my point is that this awakening now should make people understand the fundamental flaw and defect that they did not think about. The Canadian people are not represented in the Constitution.
How do we fix that?
You bring the people into the Constitution.
You've proposed in your Substack article seven subtle words that can fix this whole thing. Please.
But what I have proposed in our 1982 Constitution, the opening lines, which is what Brian Peckford was referring to in his speech in Ottawa. He said that most people don't read the opening lines. It is the opening line that defines what follows after that. So
preamble.
Yeah, the preamble. The opening sentence in the preamble of Constitution Act of 1982 is, whereas Canada is founded upon principles that recognize the supremacy of God and the rule of law, full stop. Okay, that's the opening line. And Brian Peckford says that supremacy of God means something and rule of law means something, you know. So then I discuss that in my paper. What does supremacy of God mean? It has not been defined. It is simply a sentiment that is being reflected, you know. And rule of law by whom? From where whom? It goes back to the issue of sovereignty. In the British system, the rule of law is the statutes of the parliament. There's no written constitution. It's the statute and the common law that is the unwritten constitution. in the British system. So the rule of law has a very clear meaning. It is what the parliament rules. And that is exactly what they did in 1867. The parliament ruled that they were going to create a confederation of Canada and call it the Dominion of Canada. There was no action over here. It was the leaders from here went to England and said, we have come to an agreement. We would like to be a confederation. Would you now make us a confederation, you know? And the words were very clear. This is not being derived from the people. We are asking you, the Imperial Parliament, to make us a dominion or make us a confederation. And then the Imperial Parliament obliged. So whose rule of law? That's the question to be asked. And the critical point here is sovereignty, because it is the sovereign that makes the rule of law. If you open the American Constitution, right at the top is we the people, and it describes what the we the people want. That is the Congress, the president, the judiciary, and so on. And then there is the 10 amendments, which become the Bill of Rights that is incorporated into the Constitution. None of that is here. So I suggest, propose, this is my proposition, that all we have to do is to add those seven words to the preamble. Whereas Canada is founded upon principles that recognize the supremacy of God and the rule of law derived from the will of the people. See, people are sovereign. With one stroke of the pen, for the first time in our history, Canadians since 1867 will become a sovereign people. The Americans are sovereign people. The Constitution is the people's document, the sovereign people's document. You know, it is not the document of the people who are sitting in the Congress or the Senate. They are, as you said in your opening, the servants of the people. They have been elected by the people, because a democracy is an indirect democracy. They've been elected by the people to go and sit in the parliament to represent them. From 4th District in Michigan, from the 22nd District in California, so on and so forth. That is the House of Representatives, and in the Senate, two senators from each of the states, 50 states, you know. So it is the people of sovereign. How is it that the Canadian people have not woken up and asked that question? I think the time is right now. This situation has opened up the box to tell the people, here it is. You believed in this box, that you had your rights, but you had no rights. You didn't own this box. Baubles were handed to you by the parliament, by Mr. Pierre Trudeau, and now Justin Trudeau, and they can take it back and put it back in.
Those words are sublime, Celine. With that, so many other dominoes would fall. And you go on in your article to suggest that once that is established, if it could ever be established through the amending formula, other dominoes will fall, and that would be Section 1 and Sections 33.
Exactly.
Well, hello, everyone, and I'm very excited to be here with you, and I have an amazing guest, and that is Mark Friesen. He is a grizzly patriot. See, you're looking real grizzly there. So you've been on quite a few broadcasts lately talking about something really incredible that has inspired you.
Yeah. It's for the country. It's for the people. So me and Salim have been talking quite regularly about our Constitution, or lack thereof, and the Charter of Rights and Freedoms that isn't worth the paper it's written on. And so we discovered, obviously Salim's known this for a long time, being a history professor and a political science professor, but there is a way to amend our existing Constitution. Now, for 165 years since it was given to us by the British system, it has never recognized we the people. It has never represented. It's always put the parliament and the provincial governments in the position of sovereignty and supremacy over the people, which is the British system. So essentially, we've been serfs and slaves to this parliament for our entire existence, because our Constitution does not reflect in any way the will of the people. So what we're suggesting through this amending formula, that was created in 1981, rolling into 1982, is an amending formula that allows us to amend the existing Constitution. And the first thing that we want to do with this is we want to amend the preamble where it says the supremacy of God and the rule of law, but then go on to add seven words, derived by the will of the people. It's never said that. It's never represented the people, believe it or not. And then from that, once we can effectively make that change, then we want to repeal Section 1 and Section 33 from the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which, again, those two sections put the supremacy into the hands of the Parliament and the provincial legislatures, rather than into the hands of the people, where it should have always been. Even my own experience in the last 3 years, has really done a phenomenal job of exposing the weakness of our Constitution and the weakness of our Charter and Rights and Freedoms. And so we want to bolster that. We want to bring actual inalienable rights to the people so that they cannot be abridged and cannot be limited at any whim of government. Even in my own case, for example, I have 11 tickets. Most of them are for gathering outside without wearing a mask and with more than 10 people. And in Section 1, it says that the government is obliged and obligated to demonstrably justify limiting our rights under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Not one government has done that. Not one government has demonstrably justified any of the measures or mandates that they put in place. The reason why they haven't is because our justice system understands exactly where the sovereignty and the supremacy lies in our charter and in our constitution, and that's with Parliament. And so we want to change that. And there is a mechanism to change that. And that mechanism is called the amending formula. And so again, we want to change the preamble to reflect the will of the people. And then we want to repeal Section 1 and Section 33. Once we accomplish those things, those are the first three steps to all of this. That opens the door for us to potentially create a delegation of people from every province across this country to effectively create a new constitution. And that's the path that we want to take this. Now, of course, there's a process in all of this. The amending formula dictates that we need seven provinces with 50% or more support in each of those seven provinces. We think we can get there. Not that it's going to be easy, but with some education and really driving home this idea that people really don't have inalienable rights. What they have is privileges that are given to them through this British system of governance. We want to change our Charter of Rights and Freedoms. We want to change our Constitution, that it's derived by the will of the people, and that the people are sovereign and supreme for the first time in this country.
The Freedom Convoy did not perish as a result of Emergencies Act 2022. The Freedom Convoy and the sentiments and the support and the symbolic meaning of Freedom Convoy 2022 did not perish. It lives on. And the second iteration of the Freedom Convoy movement from across the country should be, will be, if people are convinced about it and they rise up. That is, we take back our constitution. In other words, we take back our country. And how do we take back? We assert our sovereignty. Once we assert a sovereignty, that is, this constitution is derived from the will of the people, once that is written in, then the will of the people would then say, we are going to repeal Section 1 and Section 33. Once we repeal that, just as the Bill of Rights in the American Constitution will become, in our case, Section 2, Section 7 to Section 15, this will become a Charter of Rights and Freedom with a high wall that protects the people's right.
Remind us, Salim, of sections 1 and 33. Section 1, of course, being the clause that basically says you have these rights until we say you don't. And section 33 is the notwithstanding clause.
That's
Can you
right.
explain section, why the removal of those is necessary?
This was the sleight of hand. This was the charade that the 10 premiers and the prime minister, they agreed that because they had talked about the Charter of Rights and Freedom, Prime Minister Trudeau was obsessed with the idea of getting a Charter of Rights and Freedom, which is the codification of Bill of Rights, right? That's the French system, the Napoleonic.
It's Napoleonic, yeah.
In Quebec, come from France, that tradition. And in English Canada, the tradition was that of the civil law, the common law. So Pierre Trudeau was bent upon getting a codified charter of rights into the Constitution. Well, the premiers went along with it, provided that codified charter of rights and freedom were bracketed within these two sections that would maintain the supremacy of the parliament. So section one is the limitation clause. So the parliament can decide at any moment what it is going to limit. It is not an inalienable right. It is a grant, and I'm going to limit it. I'm either going to limit it or I'm going to take it away for a period of time. So that's section one, the limitation clause. Section 33 is the notwithstanding clause. So irrespective of whatever the Charter of Rights and Freedom says, we, the legislature of Quebec, we, the legislature of Ontario and what have you, we are going to not abide by those rights and freedom. We are going to go ahead with this law that we want, or that the supremacy of the parliament wants. And the example is there. Canada is constitutionally not simply a matter of a statute, a bilingual country, French and English, or English and French. And what does Quebec do? Quebec has Bill 101 that takes away the language rights of the English-speaking people of Quebec. You see, notwithstanding clause, that's what they use, you know, and nobody has said anything.
And I'll give you an example of when I first became aware of the use of Section 1 in destroying our supposed rights in the Charter, and that was the Reduce Impaired Driving Everywhere laws that were coming into effect decades ago, where we have in the Charter the right not to be arbitrarily detained. It says so right there. What's the ride program? This is where you're driving down the road and you're arbitrarily detained, given a breathalyzer or some other test of sobriety. Somebody took it all the way up to the Supreme Court. And what did the Supreme Court do? They used Section 1, you know, that little section, which Brian Feckert says that only should be used in the case of war. They used that to say that, yes, your rights are being violated. However, it's justifiable in a free and democratic society. So in other words, that one judgment is what started the ball rolling for me when I understood that we have no rights in this country. And that was decades ago.
Yeah, but that's the meaning of the supremacy of the parliament. The people are not sovereign. The people cannot in any way demand that their rights be respected, because those rights are simply privileges and grants given by the parliament. Now, if this idea gets into the people's mind, they understand that. And that's my prayer and my hope, that we people, we in Canada, we have not been sovereign people. It's no longer the issue of freedom. It's no longer the issue of charter rights. First, we have to assert a sovereignty. We are the sovereign people. That is what the 1776 revolution was about. Our case is not a revolution in the manner in which the Americans went about it, you know, faced with the British army, with their Hessian mercenaries that they had to fight to win their independence, to become free and assert the sovereignty. We are an independent country, you know, because that will be the argument with the people on the other side, that is the elite. Well, so what are you talking about? Canada is an independent country. You know, we are recognized in the United Nations by 193 countries. You know, we have our own laws, own institution, and all that goes in terms of the package of being a sovereign country. We are independent and sovereign. And our argument will be and should be that as people, we are independent, but the people are not sovereign. And the example, the analogy is again with the American situation. I mean, the Declaration of Independence and then the Constitution that is built upon the Declaration of Independence was the idea, all men are created equal. 87 years later, to be exact, the famous speech of Abraham Lincoln at Gettysburg Address, where his opening lines are, you know, 67 years ago, our fathers brought forth to this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. But now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived can long endure. In other words, 87 years later, the idea that all men are created equal was an idea that had not been fully consummated or completed. It needed a civil war to get that segment of American population who were considered property and not sovereign, that is the blacks, the slaves, to become emancipated.
Hopefully we can make the changes you propose without violence. What is necessary to get this ball rolling? For example, the amending formula of our Constitution says that, with some exceptions, it can only be amended with the support of the Parliament, the federal Parliament, that includes the Senate and the Governor General, and 7 of the 10 provinces having 50% or more of the population. So we have to convince our provincial parliaments, our provincial leaders, that this is something that the people want. This is something that the people need and deserve. This is how a free country operates. Wouldn't you agree? This is what we have to do.
Yeah, 100% with what you've laid out. That's the way to go. I hope a lot of people who are paying attention to our discussion go to the paper and read the paper and find holes in it. If they find holes in it, let us know about it so that we can make it stronger. But take the paper and the argument and discuss it.
People, go to your Substack, saleem.mansour.substack.com, and read it for yourselves and take off with it and express the will of the people. What say you?
Absolutely. Thank you.
And the great discussion has already begun, with no less than Brian Peckford chiming in on Saleem's proposal, and who has disappointingly dismissed Saleem's proposal as unrealistic. Unrealistic, reads the headline, my response to Saleem Mansour's essay on constitutional change, entitled Canada's Constitutionally Broken and By the Will of the People It Can Be Fixed. And Peckford cites 3 major flaws with Saleem's essay. Quote, first, as I indicated, changing the Constitution is no easy matter, and in Canada's case, that has been made more difficult in recent decades. Second, the suggestion that the insertion of 7 words to the Charter will somehow have a different fate than the hundreds, thousands of words now part of the Charter is naive at best, pure fantasy at worst. A third wrinkle in this simplistic essay is that any reopening of the Constitution will involve many issues, as was the case in 1981, not just the professor's suggestion, end quote. So in other words, 1, it's difficult, 2, words are meaningless, and 3, other interests have their own agendas. Well, among Robert's first reactions was that Peckford's argument is one from a visionless, defeated, fatalistic man who lacks imagination and passion. And you can bet that Saleem himself will be responding to Peckford's analysis, and you can bet that we will be talking about it on this show as that discussion progresses, to say nothing of the campaigns now being initiated by the likes of Arthur Pavlovsky and Mark Friesen. So it's too early to make any predictions where this will all lead. So be sure to join us again next week when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be all right.
What's wrong?
There's something I haven't told you, Mary.
Oh, Dick, whatever it is, whatever you've done, you know I'll stand by you.
I'm a Canadian.
What?
A Canadian.
Why were you afraid to tell me this?
Because I was ashamed.
Someone with your lineage would never knowingly consort with someone whose money is 65 cents to your dollar on a very good day. You hate me now, Mary?
No, I still love you.
You do?
As a matter of fact, I'm beginning to feel a little better. This explains almost all of your behavior.